The Asia Pacific Report on Sabahul Muslim with Sanusha Naidoo.
Sanusha, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Right, so China's economy is cooling off. What are the domestic and global implications?
Okay, so what's going on in the Chinese economy right now is that outside of COVID, I mean, after having gone through these strict lockdown measures during COVID, and then, of course, going in and out of the COVID restriction measures because of high rates of infection, you find that the economy is now no longer sustaining some of the outputs that it should be actually providing. So, for example, with the high temperatures that we see that even Europe is experiencing with regard to heat waves and so forth, this is causing a lockdown, not necessarily out of COVID dynamics, but this is a lockdown of factories because you can't necessarily compete. Infrastructure may be a bit old, or rather a bit unsustainable. And this means that you've got an incredible drag on the economy, so output is not there. And we see this in the global oil price, where because of China's economic dynamics, you see that the oil price has actually started to slump because of China's weak economic data and weak economic position. But it's also the fact that in the Chinese economy, there have been those elements that have not necessarily always been on the right side of the law, or have not necessarily been positioning themselves in a way that they are able to play by the kinds of rules around the economics. And so you've got a kind of pushback by people in terms of property developers who have essentially started to build these high-rise properties but have not been able to finish them, but people have paid for them. And so there's this kind of agitation that you see in the Chinese economy. And then lastly, you know, the premier was out in, I think it was in the southern provinces where much of the factories are located, trying to find the way in which you would look at developing some kind of economic intervention and so forth. The last issue that also kind of shows that the economy is not that where it was before COVID is the fact that there were a few banks in some of the regions that did not manage to pay people their money, and this caused a lot of uproar and pushback by communities in terms of what's going on. So I think at the end of the day, it is quite an important space to watch, because it's about the economy that we thought, as we had to look at China's rise as the engine of the global economy, but also in terms of how it shaped the global economy. And so these ripple effects are not just only being felt at the domestic level or nationally in China. It's been felt even in the region. China's relationships, etc., in Asia are also kind of now in that space where looking at what's going on in the context of China's economy will also be important. But let me also preface and say that it's not a major disruption to the global economy. I think that it's just starting to loom as China, in terms of its own economic dynamics, is going through these structural conditions and changes.
Now, the EU is pushing for closer economic and security ties in the Pacific.
Yeah. So what is interesting about the Pacific is that for the last couple of months, from the end of 2021 to now, the Pacific nations have been quite vocal about their external relations. The Chinese have been the subject again of controversy in terms of a pact that they tried to put with the Solomon Islands and how other countries have viewed it. Australia has quite a presence or a strategic location in terms of its relationship to Pacific nation states. And I think this has now become part of the kind of drive. So the U.S. is also trying to push and deepen its footprint in the Pacific region. And there's been this kind of, you know, external activity for these island states in the Pacific. And there have been these questions around what kind of relationship will they craft? with external actors like Australia, China, and the US. And it's also been very much about geopolitical interests in the Pacific region. And so now the EU is there, and the EU is also trying to deepen its relationship on security measures, on political dynamics, on economics, etc. Because I think you've got to understand that it represents a very strategic space for the EU in terms of the way you view the Indo-Pacific as well. And it's part of this whole kind of revamping of what's going on in the Indo-Pacific and in the Asia context. And so what you're having now is the EU trying to also find its way into that space in the context of, if you look at part of the Pacific, where France plays a critical role. And that is where France is also kind of does not want to allow its own traditional role, historical role in the Pacific to be cut off, in the sense that other kind of external actors are competing in their footprint in the Pacific. So in terms of the political security issues that the EU wants to bring forward, and as well as economic engagement, I think it opens up the space for competition, and it's deepening that competition in the Pacific. But it's also about, again, the challenge that China represents in terms of trying to contain China in that area.
Now, this week, India celebrated 75 years of independence. Prime Minister Modi highlighted that the big South Asian nation would become a developed country in 25 years.
Yeah, it was a very big celebration, 75 years of independence from colonialism for the Indian country, as well as the fact that it represents a significant process in terms of its development agenda. Now, what's interesting about the statement that President Modi made is that it kind of opens up the space of what kind of economic trajectory that the Chinese, that the Indians are looking at in terms of where they want to be in the next 25 years. It kind of follows what the Chinese have said in their own independent celebrations, etc., in the past, where you have these milestones. So for the Chinese, 2021 was a milestone because it was the 100-year anniversary of the Chinese Communist Party, and then 2049 will be the 100-year anniversary of their independence. And so I think in a similar kind of tack, the PM has announced that India has to be creating these milestones in terms of its own development agenda, and in fact, in other words, dealing with the economic dynamics of what a developed economy is. But being a developed economy also means that it comes with a high level of responsibility. But more importantly, I think it also means that you've got to deal with your global commitment. So I think the way the PM had phrased the issue of where India will be in 25 years is playing within the broader dynamics of the global economy. It'll be not just a kind of economy that absorbs, but it'll be directing and shaping the global output in terms of commodities, etc., production, and so forth, but also in terms of meeting demand in the country, in terms of dealing with poverty, dealing with development challenges, as well as in terms of what kind of development programs it will seek to address in terms of the socioeconomic challenges and difficulties that prevail in the Indian society. But of course, we've got to look at this and ask ourselves, you know, making the statement that we're going to be a developed economy in 25 years, by that time, we'll have to also wonder what kind of international system we have and how that will also impact on the objectives of achieving that statement that the Prime Minister had made during the celebrations this week.
All right, Zanusha, as always, thank you for your time. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Take care.